Sheila's teenage son, Stephen, had a been-there-done-that attitude. So when she took him to Cracker Barrel to try new Southern bowls, he smirked. He'd done burrito bowls, rice bowls, even a poke bowl. But Stephen had never seen Southern ingredients like sweet onion jam, maple pepper bacon, crispy grits cakes, or pimento cheese sauce. Which meant, Mom was right. From surprising moments with Mom to new Southern bowls. For a limited time at Cracker Barrel, enjoy every little thing. And May 6, 2018, menu varies by location.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 124 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we are going to say goodbye to a bunch of really crappy Eastern Conference teams. Before we do that, wanted to remind you that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handle, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. And until the end of the month, we're being hosted on FanRag Sports. So follow them on Twitter at FanRag Sports. And for their NBA content at FRS Hoops with the Z. We announced that last episode. We are happy to announce that we have already found a new home. We are going to not reveal where that is until we are done with FanRag. But rest assured, we will be continuing at beginning April 1st at a new place. In the meantime, please continue to subscribe via whatever podcast RSS feed you are already using. It should all transfer over, but we'll have more details in the next week or so on that front. Joining me, as always, is my very stable genius as a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
Well, I'm looking at the NBA picture right now in the Eastern Conference bottom that we have to talk about today, Brian, and I'm just depressed. Depressed about the amount of teams right there. But before we go into all that, just wanted to remind you guys out there, as you just said, Brian, remember to subscribe to the podcast. If you are listening strictly on the website of FanRag, that is not going to be a place we are going to be after April 1st. So make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes if you're on an Apple product. And if not, there are Stitcher, Podcast Addict, Pocket Casts if you're on Android. It's the NBA podcast. You can find us everywhere.
Yes, perfect. I knew you would swoop in and give the details that I obviously
don't. I would
don't.
Save your ass, bro.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I'm going to save your ass, Mort, because we're going to talk about the Bulls today, but we're gonna stave that off for a little bit. We're just going to work our way up from the bottom of the standings, and as a reminder, Mort, what is this segment called?
Bye, Felicia.
Yeah, it's time to say goodbye to five teams. We're recording this on Saturday. Five teams have officially been eliminated from playoff contention in the East. So we're going to work our way up because most likely we're not going to talk about any of these teams again until the NBA draft lottery. So let's start with the Atlanta Hawks, mm-hmm. who are currently 21-51. They have the third worst record in the NBA, trailing only the Memphis Grizzlies and Phoenix Suns. Let's start on a positive note, because I've sang this guy's praises a couple times this year in the My Crush segment. Yeah, should we make of Taurean Prince moving forward? Do you think he has the potential to be a number one scorer someday, or is he more like a rich man's 3-and-D guy?
I think it's somewhere in between. I mean, number one scorer is probably going a little bit too far. He's 24 already, and scoring 16 points per 36. So his potential is probably a little bit limited due to his age, which is pretty advanced. But having said that, I still feel there's a lot of potential left in the tank. It's just not superstar potential. Mm-hmm. He's going to be a fine complementary player, like a rich man's version of DeMarre Carroll, in a sense, which is kind of funny because they both have dreads. They both play the 3-4, the Atlanta Hawks, which Carroll did for a couple of years.
Right.
But he's had some really nice scoring outputs, like two 38-pointers.
Yeah, in the last week or so, after Ken Bazemore went down.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see this guy come out for a year when he's in his prime, hitting 17, 18 points for a season.
Yeah, I mean, he's at 13.5 right now.
Yeah.
And he was, sharing touches with Dennis Schroeder, with Bazemore, with John Collins, with Ersan Ilyasova and Marco Bellinelli for a while. He's only taking 11.5 shots per game.
Yeah. And he's not overly efficient. He's got a true shooting percentage of 54, but with better teammates, which will come because right now it's bloody atrocious.
Right.
I could definitely see him crawling up there, especially if, say, a Luka Doncic arrives.
Yeah, dare I say. I mean, hell, anyone in that range, you know, if they finish with the third worst record, they're most likely going to have a top five pick. So
yep.
Help is on the way. Yeah, I mean, I think I had him as my crush, like, last episode. I'm super high on the kid, but I think you're right, Mort. I don't know that I would go and say he's going to turn, like, he's not going to have, like, a Kawhi Leonard type career arc, I don't think. I mean,
no.
I would love to be proven wrong, because I just enjoy seeing young players turn out to be better than expected, but, you know, for what, he very well could fill that, like, complimentary number three role on a really good team. You just need that, like, superstar player at number one, but if they get lucky in the lottery this year, that very well could be coming. So I think, you know, there hasn't been a lot to look forward to out of the Hawks this year. I think Torian Prince is one of the bright spots,
and he's shooting 47.5% from the corners.
It's pretty damn good. Yeah, I mean, he jumped from, you know, he shot 32.5% basically from three last year on 1.7 attempts per game. He's up over 38% now, and he's taking three times as many shots. Like,
yeah,
you know, if he even stays in that range, God forbid, goes up above 40, like, every team wants what he has the skill set to provide. Like, he's going to, you know, this is where the league is going. Players like Torian Prince, you need to have at least one of these guys on your team to have a really good team.
I mean, he's still in his second year of his rookie contract, but he earned himself a lot of money this year.
Yeah, I would think so. We're now in year two of the Dennis Schroeder starting point guard experiment. Mm-hmm. Going into the year, we were all a little hesitant about it. How do you feel coming out of the year?
Similarly. I mean, yeah. Look, we knew he could score the ball. We knew that he could get some assist numbers. We knew that he could penetrate the lane, and we knew that he could hit three throws, and he's sort of continued that. We also knew he was a shaky shooter from the outside, and 29% from the outside this year kind of confirms that. He's grown a little bit as a defender, not to the degree where you would expect him to. He's also cut down his turnovers, which I find pretty impressive considering he's taking more shots and just handling a lot more of the responsibility. But I'm not sold on Schroeder being, you know, the top guy on a team at any point. A starting caliber point guard, yeah, I mean, I would be good with that, but it would depend entirely on the remaining four you trot out there with him. Mm-hmm. I mean, you would need a pretty dominant big man, especially one who can change the defensive outcome. You would need a guy like Torian Prince who can defend and shoot threes, and you would need some additional playmakers. Basically, my point is, for Schroeder to be an individual success, he would need to be flanked by a very precise recipe of the right players.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think, as you said, I don't think he's going to be the number one option on a very good team. He's proven this year he could be the number one option on a very bad team, so that's something. Like, he,
and that he can score, which isn't worthless.
Right, yeah, he's putting up a career-high 19.4 points per game. I mean, he is a good volume scorer, albeit on middling efficiency, and as you said, not a very good three-point shooter, 32% for his career. It's almost like, Mort, help could be on the way in the form of, say, a DeAndre Ayton, and then suddenly, you know, add an Ayton to Prince and Schroeder, and suddenly you've got something interesting cooking in Atlanta.
Oh, yeah. Like, I have a feeling that by year two of DeAndre Ayton's NBA career, you cannot just throw a single coverage at him in the post. Mm. And I know post-ups are dead, whatever. Look, if DeMarcus Cousins, just to put up an example here, healthy, obviously, if he goes nuts in a game and is on his way to 40 by the end of the third quarter, I mean, look at what's happening. Like, teams rush to cover him, like, double team, I mean, even triple teams at times, and he's just such a good passer that he'll pass out of that. Ayton is similar in that vein. I mean, he's not a strong defensive component right now, but he's he's a playmaker. He can finish shots. He can, oh, good Lord, he can catch lobs. He can score in transition, and he can score in the half court. He can hit mid-range jump shots, and we've even seen, you know, the ability of him to go out and hit three-pointers from the college range, which we're expecting him to do similarly at the NBA range. So when you get a guy like that, you know, you can't just leave one guy on him if he gets hot. Mm-hmm. And then you have Taurean Prince spotting up from the outside. And if you give Schroeder more space, he will find those seams and right. he will get to the basket. So it's about, if they get Aiden specifically, how do you maximize Aiden's output by finding the right players to put alongside him? If that means a sacrifice of Schroeder, which I think it maybe would, then I'm all good with that. I mean, whoever they get, if they get the number one or the number two pick, that would require a lot of follow-up moves because the franchise would need to be rearranged around Aiden or Doncic.
Right, yeah. I don't think Schroeder is their point guard of the next 10 years, but to me it feels like he's a pick-and-roll point guard without like that natural rim-rolling big man right now. I mean, John Collins has shown flashes of that at times, but he's not nearly as dominant of a presence as Aiton. So add Aiton, and I think Schroeder looks better just by virtue of having, you know, you could just basically, as you said, he's like, Aiton's ridiculous at catching lobs. Just throw it up and make him like a rich man DeAndre Jordan. Or DeAndre Jordan, who can actually shoot from more than 3 feet.
DeAndre Jordan, who can hit three throws and shoot and be an offensive. Right. Yeah. But you know what's funny, though? Because when we look at fit, Aiden is the better player, but Marvin Bagley would probably be the better fit if we looked at it from Schroeder's perspective, because Bagley is just a little bit more, I want to say relentless. I think that's a better word. He's if you had to compare, and again, I hate comps, but that's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. Bagley is a little bit Amari Stoudemire-ish. You know, he's the guy who's going to catch the ball off a pick and roll and then just go toward the basket and try to dunk on everybody. So there's like a fearlessness and relentlessness there that I think would just fit so well with Schroeder. Whereas Aiden is a little bit more calculated. Mm-hmm. Like he's a little bit more of a finesse guy, though he's not afraid to rise up and dunk. Like one of my comps for him is a combination between Boogie and Patrick Ewing, which is by no means a bad player, but it's a guy where you have to center everything around him. Whereas Bagley, I feel Bagley is more of a guy who can just plug into a system and then he'll just go get buckets.
Gotcha. So if they are lucky enough to get the number one pick, I know Aiton's number one on your big board. Would you go with him over Doncic being the better fit in Atlanta?
Well, like I said last time, I mean, this changes weekly. Right now, I still have Aiden, but I mean, Doncic is just so ridiculous. You can't go wrong with either. I mean, I'm still going to go Aiden right now, but I would say Aiden for everybody because I never consider fit or well need at the draft. You go with the best player. Right now, I think that's Aiden, but next week it could be Doncic. So DeAndre Doncic.
good answer.
Yeah.
So let's say, you know, if they miss out on a top two pick.
Right.
And then, you know, say they take a Marvin Bagley. Do you think John Collins can slide over to the five next year?
He's a little bit small, but I mean, today's league, that might not be that big of a problem. The thing with Collins coming into the NBA was that he was an atrocious defender. I think he has his moments this year where he's looked, you know, not entirely horrible, but he is a rookie big, so mostly it's been bad. But that's to be expected. Whether it's an IQ thing or whether it's an age thing, because you have to realize that Collins at Wake Forest was a year younger than everyone else when he was a sophomore. So he was the age of a freshman while he played in a sophomore season. So he's a year younger, meaning that's 1 year less of, you know, experience and basketball IQ development and whatever. So I want to see him get a little bit more responsibility. Maybe at the five, that's where that situation would present itself. So yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing some minutes for him, but I think he's very, very good build for the four.
Yeah, and I should note, this is assuming, I mean, Dwayne Dedman has a $6.3 million player option. So that question is really just, if he declines the player option, would John Collins be able to move? Otherwise, you don't have to worry about that problem because you're going to have Dedman there for a year.
But Collins, I mean, now that we're on the subject, I really love what he's been doing this year.
Yeah.
I mean, he's, and that efficiency that he brought, that he had at Wake Forest, he's really carried that over, which was one of the things that I was, I made that my make or break case with him before he was drafted, which was, he can carve out an NBA career that's going to be really nice as long as he carries over the efficiency. And look, I mean, the true shooting percentage right now is at almost 63.
Yeah. I mean,
and he's got a PER of 19.
The Hawks have done well in the draft the last couple of years between Dedman and Prince, considering they, you know, this is the first real year of their rebuild. Like, they were above 500 last year. They were in the playoffs last year. So, like, they have a pretty good head start with, you know, we're not saying Schroeder is, like, a top 10 point guard, but he's an above average point guard. They have Prince. They have Collins. Like, they have some good complementary guys. Now you just need that star player, but they're at least in the range of that in the draft. So I don't think Atlanta is going to stay down in the Eastern Conference basement for very long, would be my overall take on this team.
And maybe, like, who knows if DeAndre Bembry suddenly becomes a thing, right?
Right. That's true.
Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy. They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine and More.
Welcome to Total Wine and More. It's much more than a wine store. It's the eighth wonder of the world.
When people talk about Total Wine and More, they get a little carried away. We're just a big, friendly place run by people with a passion for wine and beer. See, we travel the world to find the best wines from the best regions, and we sell them at the lowest prices anywhere.
And friendly, helpful experts at every turn.
You know what? Maybe we are the eighth wonder of the world.
Shop in store or online at TotalWine.com.
All right, Mort, let's swing over to a fellow team in their division, the Orlando Magic, who I am not nearly as high on long term. We got to first address Mark Stein of the New York Times recently reported that the Magic are likely to fire Frank Vogel at the end of the season. Do you think that's a smart move from them?
Well, I like Frank. I think he's a good coach. So it would depend entirely on who they bring in. And, you know, we've heard a couple of rumors in regards to who that name is. And we'll see if it's true. I don't know if we're allowed to say this on the podcast, though.
No, we should. We definitely should not.
Okay, I'm not going to say that then. But, I mean, look, Vogel is... I think he proved himself in Indiana back in the day. I think he was given a pretty weird roster this year as well. So I would probably have given him a little more leash. But, you know, it is what it is. And Orlando is not a stranger to making weird moves. So I guess it fits their MO.
Yeah. So what would you want to see out of their next coach, whoever it may be? Like, what characteristics should they be pursuing?
Leadership. Oh my god, leadership. I mean, look, I wrote a piece a year ago for, I don't know if this, if the site is still up. Remember 16 Wins a Ring?
Yeah. I do not think it's still up.
I don't think it is either. So I wrote a piece arguing that certain coaches should actually be looked at as the franchise kind of player. If at least if you don't have a clear-cut superstar on the roster, if you don't have anyone waiting in the wings who are going to be clear, like, level A superstars, then go out and spend money on a coach that comes in and just sets the record straight with everything, like, streamlines the entire organization, and is that guy who changes the culture. So that's what I would be looking for primarily. A guy who's really good with the X's and O's. But here's the thing. Everyone is good with the X's and O's. I'm not really worried about that.
Yeah.
I need the personality. I need a dominant personality who empowers his players, but also sets boundaries, knows how to get the most out of people.
See, I mean, I agree with you there, but I don't know that Frank Vogel isn't that guy. I just think
they brought him in
like because they thought they had a good team, and then they didn't have a good team, and now he's like, he proved. I think you're totally right. He's a good coach. He proved that with Indiana earlier this decade, but I don't think he has the reputation of player development necessarily. Like he's more. I don't mean this like negatively, but he's more of like a win now guy. Like you give, like he can help coax your roster. If you have a good roster, he can help coax them into the playoffs and make them a competitive team. But if you have a bunch of young kids who are not very good and not cohesive and your front office is undergoing an overhaul, I don't think he's just not right for that type of job. So, you know, I would look at like what the Sixers did with Brett Brown. Like they knew they were about to embark on a long-term rebuild. They went after the guy from San Antonio, which more like, as you're saying, go after a guy from a culture that you want to emulate, go after a guy who has the player development reputation and realize like you need to give him a long ass leash. Like you can't, you know, don't hire someone and turn them around and fire them 2 years later because your team still sucks. Like, look in the mirror. Right. Your team sucks because you've had a number of miscues over the years that we have rightly mocked on this podcast. It's, you know, you're basically, if you're Orlando, you may have to start from square one this summer, which we'll address in a minute. So you need to look for a coach who's like ready and willing to sign on. Don't go after a Doc Rivers if you want, like a Doc Rivers type, or like, you know, they had Scott Skiles. Like, what the hell are you doing hiring Scott Skiles? Like, don't go after, like, you have a bunch of young players. Like, go after someone who's going to help develop those players into something that might be attractive to free agents one day, maybe.
And in lieu of that, I'm just going to throw this one out there. Frank Vogel, let's assume for a second that he takes over New Orleans or Denver this summer.
Yeah.
Those two situations, because I think those two, I mean, Michael Malone and Alvin Gentry, they could be out the door.
I think,
and if Vogel takes over,
Gentry is probably safe just because they're going to make the playoffs, but Mike Malone is probably out.
Yeah. So okay, totally, but then let's just take Denver.
Yeah.
Frank Vogel on Denver.
Yeah.
I mean, and this is a young group, yes, so it's not, there is some element of player development to it, but it's a young group that's ready to compete for a lot of different things.
Yeah.
And there's a Paul Millsap there, which, you know, he loves Paul Millsap.
Yeah.
We heard that before.
Right.
That would just make so much sense to me, him landing in Denver.
Yeah, I agree. That's actually a really good idea. I think that would be a good fit for all sides. So we got to talk about Aaron Gordon, because he is going to be a restricted free agent this summer. You know, we've seen it where restricted free agency tends to cool interest just because teams don't want to tie up their cap space in these guys. But every summer there tends to be one or two. Otto Porter was the guy last summer who got maxed out. It seems like Gordon and Julius Randle are the two most likely candidates to get a huge deal this summer. So if you're the Magic, what do? Are you willing to match any offer up to a max that he gets?
That's the big question, isn't it?
Yeah.
I would prefer a deal that's in the 80-85 million area, because I'm just not entirely sure. But I will say this. Let's assume that the year Aaron Gordon had last year was the defining year, like that was the year four. I feel much more certain now that if you are to max him out, or, you know, match a deal that's him maxed out, I would feel way more certain now matching that deal than I would a year ago.
Oh yeah.
So, I mean, that's to his credit, and the fact that he's still, let me just check, 22.
Right.
If push comes to shove, I do it.
Yeah.
But I would definitely see if I could get him for cheaper.
Yeah.
I would go to him on the first day of free agency. Look, $85 million. take him.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I would, if I'm the Magic, I would not go and offer him a full 5-year max right away.
Nope.
I would say, here's a slight discount. If you can get something better, we will probably match it. But I'm with you.
Well, don't say that.
Well, yeah,
don't tell him to match it. Come on.
Yeah. No, you don't, right. You have it in the back of your mind. But
yeah,
I mean, I'm with you in that I would match anything he got. Just because we've talked about it with Blake Griffin and company before. You match it just to have an asset to flip later, if nothing else, just because he's so young. I mean, this is the first year they let him actually play his real position, and he broke out and had a huge year. I mean, the three-point shooting has cooled off from the beginning of the year, but you know, he's still having a sensational season overall.
Still really respectable. Young. I mean, 34%, that's not bad for a power forward.
Right, yeah. Especially on almost 6 attempts per game. Like,
right.
You could see something developing there where, like, this guy still has a lot of upside. So, yeah, I would retain him. But that said, this front office has no ties to him. They aren't the same, you know, it's not Rob Hennigan there anymore. They're not the people who drafted him. So, right. it does beg the question, you know, maybe they took Jonathan Isaac last summer, who in theory probably profiles best as a four as well, which seemed, you know, that raised an eyebrow. Now, right now they are fourth in the standings. So if the lottery holds to form, you know, you're right in like that Jaren Jackson, Michael Porter, Marvin Bagley territory.
Mm-hmm.
What happens there? Like, do you bypass all those guys? And like, now they obviously need a point guard because they traded Elfrid Payton for peanuts. So do you move, like, do you take Trae Young at four?
I think it's inevitable that Trae Young ends up a Magic.
Yeah.
Oh, in some respects. Here's what I will say, though. Imagine if Orlando does not match an offer sheet for Gordon. Mm-hmm. Meaning, Gordon walks for nothing, and Mario Hezonja walks for nothing.
Yeah.
that's two top... Five? Oh, yeah, he was drafted fifth, right?
Yeah,
wasn't he?
He was.
So that's two top five draft picks that you let walk for nothing.
Yeah, and you got rid of Oladipo for Serge Ibaka, which lasted half a season. Yeah.
That's just not good enough. That's just bad asset management.
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't blame Frank Vogel for this because they've just pissed away so many top five draft picks. And, like, you know, the Oladipo, we see now that he turned into an all-star. Like, you pair him with a non-shooting point guard in Elfrid Payton, and you're limiting his ceiling. If you let him do what he's doing in Indiana, like, he might have been able to do this before, but they just constructed this roster so poorly. And, like, we've roundly mocked the Bismack Biyombo contract, but, like, you have Vucevic. What the hell are you doing? Why are you signing another center to a 4-year, $70 million deal? It's like, I honestly don't know what the Magic were doing before, but, like, right now, Mort, let's put aside Aaron Gordon, just because we don't know if he's going to be back. But is there a single player on this team that you feel comfortable building around? Like,
not
considering
really.
A franchise, not even like a superstar, but just like...
No, I mean, I feel comfortable hanging on to Evan Fournier. He's decent.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you just mentioned Elfrid Payton, and I just realized something, Brian, because they traded him for a second rounder.
Yeah.
So if they do let Gordon go, and Hezonja is going to walk regardless...
Yep.
That would mean three top 10 picks
yep.
have gone, and the return for those three combined is one second round draft pick.
And don't forget, they traded up to get Payton. They traded the 12, which turned into Dario Saric. Plus,
that's right. So that's 12
first.
Out of the window as well. This is extremely poor. This is just, this is one of the worst, the last three years of operations that I've seen.
I mean, it's just, like, it's truly astounding how many... And maybe it's bad luck, I mean, in terms of, like, where their picks landed and which prospects were available, but...
Well, no, you're not forced to take a point guard who can't shoot.
Right, yeah, and trade up for him. Give up a first-round pick to move up two spots.
Look, that there's no excuse for that. I don't think there's anything regarding the luck here. This is just complete incompetence on the front office, part. And that's not. I don't feel comfortable sitting here just crabbing on Orlando's entire management system. But this has been atrocious. And the thing is, every single fan has been on this as soon as it happened.
Yeah.
And all the guys out there on NBA Twitter and the analysts, everyone saw this coming. Everyone correctly predicted this move and this move in isolation would not work. Mm-hmm. And it keeps on happening. And if I say, you said that they might end up taking Trae Young at fourth, if that's where they land. I don't have Trae Young that high, and it's totally going to happen. And if I would not advise them to do it. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this poor team. I'm really sorry, Magic fans. I make fun of this because a lot of people compared the Magic to the Sixers during the height of the process and said well, the Magic are rebuilding the right way, and now. I mean, the Magic had a year head start on Philly, and look at where the two teams are respectively right now. So,
well, at least you're not petty.
It's just it sucks, but I genuinely feel bad for Magic fans.
Yeah.
I hope this new front office is better than the old one, to say the least. But it's going to be a very pivotal summer with the Gordon decision and with this, whatever this pick ends up.
Right.
I mean, it's, I think it's very possible that pick determines Gordon's fate, and then it might determine Jonathan Isaac's fate too. It's just going to be a weird.
It's going to be weird.
Yeah, a weird.
And year. And we should also clarify the reason that we've not had an Orlando Magic fan on this podcast as a guest is simply because we do not want the responsibility of having splattered brains all out on our screens.
I thought you were going to say because there are no Orlando Magic fans on.
That's, you know what? I'm actually not sure anymore. Yeah. It is weird because when I go to Twitter and I search Orlando Magic fans, all that comes up is a dust ball. It's pretty weird.
Tears. Just a lot of tears.
I'm actually hearing Twitter cry. Yeah. And
All right, boy, let's move on to your beloved Brooklyn Nets, who you picked as a playoff team at the beginning of this season.
I stand by that no injuries, they would have made it. I don't care.
Yeah, so do you think it was really, Jeremy Lin went down immediately, D'Angelo Russell missed a lot of time as well.
Yeah.
Do you think it really was, you're staying resolute? You think this was a 40-plus win team?
I think it. Look, Jeremy Lin is amazing. The game he had when he went down, he had 18 and 4 assists in 25 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
He's in his prime of his career. He's a great pick and roll option. I think if him healthy would have allowed D'Angelo Russell to play a lot off of him, a lot more. So I'm not saying that Jeremy Lin is the sole reason. D'Angelo having played at this point only 39 games, obviously, as well. I also expected Caris LeVert to take a little bit of more of a leap going forward. But overall, yes, I do feel that this roster could have made some noise. If I'm being completely honest with myself, maybe not playoffs, but they would have been in that on-the-bubble team. We would have talked about them could Brooklyn make the playoffs? They would have been in the same breath as Detroit, I think.
Mm. Yeah. I still don't think they would have been a playoff team. I'm standing by that one, but
that's fair.
Yeah, I think they realistically could have competed for 35 wins, maybe. Best case scenario, 35 wins.
I think they're a little bit higher than that, though. But I get the reasoning behind it. Yeah. The thing that I'm pretty disappointed about, though, now that we're talking about the Nets, is Isaiah Whitehead has only played 16 games this year. One of the reasons I also predicted them to make the playoffs was because I thought Whitehead was going to come out of nowhere. I really, really thought that his physical profile, his athleticism, and the way that he just played the game in his rookie season it suggested a leap for year two, and that didn't happen, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So that's a part of it as well. I'm kind of hoping next year that he just does something wacky, because I think he's a guy who's going to surprise a lot of people.
Yeah. We will talk about their young talent, their complimentary young talent, in a minute, but we first got to ask about Russell. He is eligible for an extension this summer. So what do? If you're the Nets,
you offer him something that's reasonable. You hope he takes it, and if not, you play the restricted free agency game. There's really no other way to do it.
What would you consider reasonable?
Well, that's a good question, because he's an explosive scorer. Mm-hmm. He's a very good playmaker. Defensively, he struggled a lot. Now he's had some injury concerns. He also missed 19 games last year. So all those things do add up to a kind of a lowball offer, I think, where you go 4 years, 50, 55 million.
Ooh, his agent hangs up the phone immediately.
I know, but I mean, like, what do? You just don't start him at 80. You just don't.
Yeah. I mean, like, so Gary Harris signed, it could be worth up to 84, but I think it's somewhere in the low 70s.
Yeah, but Gary Harris was always better.
Yeah, I know. But, like, I think that's kind of where he's going to see himself in terms of extension talk.
I mean, look, I don't disagree. I'm just saying that that's where you start him off with. If he hangs up the phone, that's his prerogative, and that's entirely fair. I mean, look, if you look back at the Jimmy Butler situation, the Bulls offered him, I think, $11 million a year. Mm-hmm. And he would have taken it had they just bumped it up to 12, I think, right, the line was. And they went, nope. Yeah. Which, I wouldn't go as far. Like, if D'Angelo Russell and his agent come back and go, you know what, give us 60 mm-hmm. over 4 years?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Fine. Yeah. That's okay. We'll do it. Like, you don't need to not be flexible just for the sake of not being flexible. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to just throw a wad of cash towards him with those concerns. If he then just balls out in year four, averages 24 and has a Victor Oladipo season, yeah, and he goes into restricted free agency, you still have every right to match contracts. So, yeah, like, and then you do it, and then you go, okay, well, you know, he earned it. We couldn't predict this. At the point in time, we were concerned.
Right. I think that's the fair take. You offer him, yeah, I'd be willing to do 4 years 60, even probably 4 years 65.
I could be persuaded to 60 as well. Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, yes, you don't offer him a max deal right away, and then if he says no, you can match him next summer and there's no harm done. But
right,
you know, for a Brooklyn team that doesn't have, they still don't have a first round pick. This is the last year. After this year, they have their first round picks back. But, you know, this is the way that Sean Marks has been accumulating talent, is through trades, young talent, I should say. Mm. So, like, Russell, at least for the next year, is really their best hope for having a superstar caliber player. And Russell has shown flashes. I mean, offensively, especially. I mean, defensively, he's still not all that great. But he's, you know, he's had some games where he's really proven that he can be that kind of takeover scorer. So
did you see that first quarter against Toronto?
Yeah. Like, he can go nuclear at times.
That was insane.
Yeah. So, like, if I'm Brooklyn, I want to keep him long term. I think you're right, Moore. Yeah. It's just finding a price point that works for both sides.
And I just want to say this. I think he's going to get a lot better. Yeah. I would be, the reason I would do it, you asked me, like, what would I do? I'm thinking as a team, because mm-hmm. if I can get D'Angelo Russell at below market value, and a significant portion below market value, obviously I would take that. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a game. This is a cat and mouse game. And if you get a guy to under market value, you take it and you don't look back. That's your job. That's your mission going into all this.
Yeah.
If he balls out next year and averages 25, you know, I would be more than happy to say, well, you know what? Here's the max. You earned it. But in case he was kind of hesitant about himself and his abilities, he was like, okay, 60 million, mm-hmm. that's 15 million a year. You know, I might get hurt. Okay, I'm going to grab it. And then he goes out and averages 25 anyway. I win.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. All right, let's move to some of their other young players more, because they have a bunch of guys who all in their early to mid-20s, a lot of whom have been showing out this year. Who in particular has caught your eye?
Well, Jared Allen has been pretty good for a rookie. 8 points a game, 5.5 rebounds, a block. He's been good. I don't want to say he's like the next coming of Tyson Chandler necessarily, which he was billed as coming in, but he's going to be a very effective big. And, you know, when you look at that team, that's really what they need at this point. They don't have a big. You know, trading Brook Lopez, that was the big one.
Right.
They thought they'd be getting something. I thought, too, they'd be getting something back when they traded for Jahlil Okafor. That did not exactly turn into anything. Mm-hmm. I still think Oak can get something done. I mean, after all, he's averaging 6 points a game in just 12 minutes. So he's at a point every second minute, which isn't bad.
Right.
So he can be that volume scorer off the bench, but he's not a guy you can count on for 32, 35 minutes of ball game. Whereas I think Jared Allen could develop into that type of guy.
Yeah, I totally agree. Allen's been a huge surprise. We thought, even dating back to the draft, that he looked like a potential steal. I think he was number 22 overall, I want to say.
He was, yeah.
Yeah, and we identified that immediately as like, oh, good for you, Nets. That was some good value to find in the bottom half of the first round. I mean, we've mentioned Alan Crabb in Crush's past. You had Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, I believe, last episode or two episodes ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Both of those guys have been showing out this year. Also, shout out to Spencer Dinwiddie. Out of nowhere. He was one of their more reliable players, especially while D'Angelo Russell was out. Like, they were kind of up Schitt's Creek without Russell and Jeremy Lin. And then Spencer Dinwiddie swooped in and, you know, shooting under 40% from the field, which is not ideal, but still pretty damn good otherwise.
So can I just inject something here? Remember last episode when we were talking about, or I don't remember if it was the last episode or the episode before that, we were talking about Phoenix.
Yeah.
In our By Felicia segment. And we were talking about the fact that Ryan McDonough is considering trading draft picks for veterans and all that. Mm-hmm. This is why you don't. Like, this isn't necessarily draft picks, but you have so many young guys on Brooklyn that's been accumulated. And for Sean Marks and company, like, just one of those guys, just one of them needs to hit home. Like, one of them needs to be a hit. And if they do that, that's great, and that's something you can move forward with. Again, like this a similar comparison is in Philadelphia under Sam Hinkie with Robert Covington.
Yep.
Like, these are small gambles, and rookie contracts are small gambles, again, because they're not that significant. This is why you don't just give up draft picks.
Yeah.
You keep them to just add another dice to the table.
Right, yeah. They're all just swings, and you want as many swings as possible, because, if a Caris LeVert hits, or if a Jared Allen hits, or a Rondae Hollis-Jefferson hits, then you re-sign them, and then you have, like, you're still looking for that superstar, much like Atlanta, but at least you have some of your other core guys locked up. It makes total sense. And it's like, that was why trading for Okafor and Russell and Stauskas was smart, too. If any of those guys hit, great.
Exactly.
That's awesome. Yep. But let's talk about Okafor more, because he is back to the land of getting healthy DNPs. What's going on with him? What do you think is going to happen this summer? The Nets can only offer him up to what his fourth-year team option would have been, which was $6.3 million
that
the Sixers declined.
He's going to go home, I think.
To Chicago?
Yeah, I think so. I wouldn't be surprised. The Bulls have talked about him prior, and they were pretty high on him, and they seemed to carry their love for a player for a lot of years. I mean, look, they chased Pau Gasol for so long that they've decided to sign him at age 34,
right?
I think, you know. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him end up a Bull next year. I think that as a backup, obviously, I don't think he's going to get big money offers either way. I think he's going to get one of those prove-it contracts. And I think him going home is going to be like a conscious thing with him going, you know what, I need to regroup. I need to go home, find my roots, and see if I can make something out of this.
Yeah, so do you think, I mean, a lot of the talk, especially this year when he was still in Philly, was like, oh, it's not fair to him. You know, he's buried behind Embiid, and before that he was buried behind Embiid and Nerlens Noel. Clearly, you know, now he's had a new opportunity in Brooklyn and hasn't lit the world on fire, to say the least. So, you know, remove the fact that he was the number three overall pick, because he, compared to those draft expectations, yes, he's an enormous bust. But do you think he can still salvage his career to the point where... Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
we talked about this.
Right. He's a, like, Greg Monroe, Al Jefferson type off
that's,
the bench.
That's the ceiling, right? I mean, that has to be the ceiling. He's not going to go beyond a prime Greg Monroe thing, I don't think.
I don't either.
And then you can ask yourself, if he reaches like a just below Greg Monroe level, is he a bust? I don't think he's a bust. I just think he was drafted too high, but it's not like he's not playable. And I want to say two things can be true at the same time. I do think it affected him playing behind Embiid and Noel and not being given the proper role. I think he was given the right role in his rookie season. He was given 30 minutes a game, if I'm not mistaken.
Upward.
And he was and he was given a lot of shots. But I also think they started to find some success in him at times. Like his large scoring outputs did seem to, like when he got into a rhythm, he was pretty unstoppable.
Yeah.
And then his sophomore year, they just completely went away from that. And I don't think it's easy to adjust to a life where you just go, oh, I'm playing 30 minutes a game to start my NBA career, and now suddenly I'm getting DNPs, even though I'm fully healthy.
Right.
That just doesn't make sense. And I think he's way too much in his head right now because of that.
Yeah.
So that's why I think he's going to go to the Bulls. I think he wants to go home, be close to his family, and just have a chance of him kind of regroup and see what's if there is anything to it. The thing is, and just to preface it, I don't think he'll sign with the Bulls if they don't find a way to rid themselves of Cristiano Felicio. Because there's no way they're paying him $8 million a year and then going after Okafor as well.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. Because, I mean, the problem with Okafor is he was a better passer in college than he's shown in the NBA so far. And... Yes. You know, post-ups are mathematically the least efficient shot in basketball. So you don't want to structure your whole offense around them. That's just basic math at this point. And unfortunately, that is Jahlil Okafor's bread and butter. Like he's, you know, even if he's a good scorer in those situations, he is so bad defensively, especially in pick and rolls, that it's hard. He is more of a liability on defense than he's a value on offense. So you have to limit his minutes. Like the Sixers played him 30 minutes a game and he put up pretty decent raw counting numbers. You know who else did that? Michael Carter-Williams. And look at where he is right now. Like I mean, you can look at the box score and said, this guy's a 20-10 guy, but at what cost? You know,
absolutely. No, he's giving up a ton. I mean, we are in no way in disagreement about that.
Right. Don't worry. Right. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying that you're under that impression. Like I know you.
Oh no. Yeah.
But just to clarify for like everyone out there, like if you go and look at his basketball reference page, it looks like he had a great rookie season. But then like I watched those games. He is an atrocious pick and roll defender, and unfortunately, that's what teams run these days. So until he figures out how to do that, like I think it would be good for him maybe to go to a Bulls or any team that's like willing to like really work with him on improving his footwork and his lateral mobility, because otherwise, like, he is going to be out of the league soon. Like, if you're a big man and you can't guard pick and rolls, you have no place in the NBA. You're
just going to get run off. Even as a Greg Monroe type, actually. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Let
me just say one thing about Jahlil, by the way.
Yeah.
There is one part of his game that I feel that everyone has not given him enough credit for in terms of improvement. When he came into the league, he had just shot 51% from the foul line at Duke.
Yep.
And in the NBA, usually it goes the other way. Like if you shoot a certain percentage college, that goes down in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
To his credit, 68% from his career. So what I take away from that is there are certain elements where he can improve, where he is, you know, where he's putting in the work and you're seeing the results. Whether that's, you know, I want to say athletically, like you just mentioned, someone to work with his footwork. Like he could just be athletically so slow that he could never be a pick and roll defender.
Mm-hmm.
But at the very least, I think you could optimize his skill set. I think you could make him as efficient as possible in terms of the raw skills, like passing, shooting free throws, rebounding, because I think you can improve him as a rebounder.
Yeah.
And all these things. So I think there is something to be done. But I agree with you at the same time. If the footwork and the athleticism simply does not carry over, hello, China.
Yeah, right.
Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy. They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine and More.
Welcome to Total Wine and More. It's much more than a wine store. It's the eighth wonder of the world.
When people talk about Total Wine and More, they get a little carried away. We're just a big friendly place run by people with a passion for wine and beer. See, we travel the world to find the best wines from the best regions, and we sell them at the lowest prices anywhere.
And friendly, helpful experts at every turn.
You know what? Maybe we are the eighth wonder of the world.
Shop in store or online at TotalWine.com.
Let's talk about your Bulls, or your former Bulls, whatever.
Thank you.
On the bright side, let's start positively, and then we can work our way into a Garpax-fueled rage. On the bright side, Jimmy Butler trade isn't looking as bad as it did prior to the season. Chris Dunn has turned into a decent point guard. Lauri Markkanen is a stud. Let's go to Zach LaVine, though, because he is a restricted free agent like Aaron Gordon. What do you do with him? Like, how much are you willing to re-sign him for?
I've been talking about this at length with Bolt's Twitter, simply because that's been a conversation that's brought up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a very positive on Zach LaVine. He's an absolute train wreck defensively. Mm-hmm. In terms of defensive impact, I think he's even worse than Jahlil Okafor.
Ooh, wow.
It's so bad. Like, on the ball, he can handle himself on the ball, but every NBA player can, even Jahlil, because that's just... But when he's off the ball, he is completely confused in terms of schemes. He overplays. He gambles. It's just he has no understanding of where he is, where he should be, and what his job is. And I understand he's been sitting out for a year, so there is a certain amount of understanding on that point. But he's what? Let me just look it up. He's a certain amount of games into the season now, to the point where you should see at least some improvements. But yeah, that's not happened. He's 24 games into the season. He's inefficient as a shooter. He takes really weird shots off the dribble. Some of the shots you should just never see in a basketball game, because if he, you know, he looks at himself as being the guy, and I don't think he is the guy, but he's playing like the guy, and that's a problem. So because of that, to answer your question, I would lowball the living hell out of him, and I would probably start him at around $11 million a year tops.
Wow.
Yeah.
So if he, let's say he gets, we'll go again, reference Gary Harris. He gets 4 years, $70 million. You say,
bye, Felicia.
Wow.
Look, he's not, Brian, you have to understand this. You know, you just talked about Jahlil Okafor and said, I watched those games.
Yeah.
You
know,
you
can look at
the box score. This guy he's got a lot of potential because of his athleticism.
Yeah.
I'm not going to refute that at any point. He's also got potential as a playmaker. He's very good on the ball in terms of, you know, his handle. He does have amazing shooting range. So there's a lot there that offensively you like. He's right. Even, and this was my big problem with him coming into to the Bulls, actually, was that he was never getting to the line. He's improved upon that. So there are definitely some things here. Like, his free throw rate went from 19.7 last year to 30 this year. That's a major upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
But he's just, he needs to put it all together first before he should be invested in terms of like 80 million, 90 million, 100 million.
Yeah.
The Bulls are going to do it regardless because
right.
they act out of narratives and not out of logic.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to max him, maybe even without anyone offering him the max, because that's what they do. They do these things. They have a tendency to negotiate against themselves. Yeah. But I'm just saying, at this point in time, I would not offer him more than $11 million a year. If push came to shove, I could go on with 12 and a half
mm-hmm.
at the very, very max. But I would not appreciate anything more, because the more that I watch from this guy right now is someone who's just in this mindset of, I need to be the guy. That's not a guy who is going to play team basketball, first of all, and you need to do that in this case.
Mm-hmm.
And defensively, he's so bad that he might give you 20 but give up 35. That's not a winning combo.
Yeah. I mean, I hear you. If they are going to max him, I think that is an enormous mistake. I think I would go higher than you would in terms of what I'd be willing to offer him. Again, and it all goes back to, like, you can always trade him later, but, you know,
if you overpay him.
We've seen it. I mean, yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't think it's going to turn into like a Luol Deng situation, though. Like, he's so young and he has a high enough upside that I think, like, you could probably find a team willing to take him on. You might not get
much
back.
Yeah, but not on a max.
No, right. Not on
a max, though.
No. A max would be horrible. But, like, if Alan Crabb can be flipped at 4 years, 75, I think Zach LaVine could be flipped to 4 years, 75.
Oh, yeah. No. If he gets something like that, yes. I was going under the assumption that you meant max.
Oh, no. I think, okay. If they max him out, that is an enormous mistake. We are full agreement there. But I would go higher than $11 million a year.
I wouldn't go higher just for the sake of it. I don't think he's proven anything, honestly.
Right. I would match higher than 11.
How far would you go to match? Like 60?
No,
70?
I would go up to 75.
75? Okay, so let me ask you, what do you see from him? Is it all about the potential? Because the production is not at any point warranted of 75.
Yeah, I think it's the potential. I mean, the potential he showed in Minnesota. Like, I'm not surprised that his efficiency is down in Chicago just because, you know, he missed so much time and it's a new set of teammates and most of his teammates suck. But, yeah, I mean, I just think, again, it's more of a, you re-sign him as an asset retention rather than, I'm confident that this guy is going to be, like, the number one option on your team. But I also don't want... You know, he's one of the main pieces I just traded Jimmy Butler for. I want to make sure I get more than one season out of him.
And see, that's the thing. I would never sign anyone off of narrative. Screw the narrative. Doesn't matter. And by the way, just to put this into context, a month ago, I actually said that I would go as far as $15 million a year to re-sign him. But when I said that, I felt icky inside.
Mm.
And then I started looking more at what he did. And that's when I took a little bit more hard-headed approach.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's good. I think this is an Andrew Wiggins situation waiting to happen.
Wow. Well, yeah, if they max him, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but also, you know, the fact that you overvalue this guy because of youth.
Yeah.
I where is the major improvement?
I mean, he's 23. Like, we're not going to see it for possibly another couple of years, but like...
Yeah, he's 23. He's 6,500 minutes into his NBA career, though.
But
the major improvement?
He was improving significantly in Minnesota before he went down.
As a scorer, where he was flanked by Karl Anthony Towns, though.
Yeah, but now he's going to
be flanked. Ain't no Karl Anthony Towns on the Bulls.
Markkanen's not bad.
He's not Karl Anthony Towns.
Of course he's not. But, like, he's going to draw attention away. Depends on who they get in the draft this year. But in theory, they're going to have another top 10 pick who might draw some attention away.
Yeah.
Like... He's not going to be the top player on the Bulls.
No, but you tell him that. That's the thing.
Yeah. I mean, I hear you. I would be more willing to...
No, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. I know that he's going to get more.
Yeah.
I know. I mean, obviously, he's probably going to sign for the Max. I wouldn't be surprised at all. I know there are a lot of Chicago Bulls fans out there who listens to the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Just brace yourself, guys.
Yeah.
Brace yourselves. Yeah. It's going to happen, and it's not going to be through them matching an offer sheet. It's going to be them signing him to a Max unprovoked because that's what they do. Brace yourselves.
Yeah, that's going to be brutal. Let's go to Chris Dunn, though, another piece of the big trade. Do you think he's their long-term answer at point guard? He's actually, you know, compared to last year when he was just so devastatingly awful, he's been decent to kind of good this year?
Yeah, he's been decent to kind of good. He's also already 24 in his second season, so retirement plans?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. No, he's been good. I don't want to be negative on Dunn. He's been really good, especially defensively. The thing that concerns me with Dunn is, again, his age. You're not going to get a whole lot more out of him from a potential standpoint. Like, he might be more refined as a shooter as his career goes on, but there are several layers to him where you need to see improvements. Like, efficiency-wise, he's got a true shooting percentage of 48.8, which is just not good enough. And he's not, and part of that is him not getting to the free throw line. Like, he's got a free throw rate of 17.3. And when you're a 6'4 point guard with a 6'9 wingspan who's athletic and strong, that's just inexcusable. So he needs to take a little bit more leadership and ownership of that role. And that's also part why I was against the whole LaVine thing. Their chemistry, has been reported heavily in Chicago media as well, has been really worrisome. When LaVine has the ball, he goes into isolation mode and doesn't even spot Dunn when he's open in the corners. And it's sort of like my turn, your turn. So that chemistry is just non-existent. And they even played together in Minnesota. So it's not like they're unfamiliar with each other.
Right.
So there are some things that need to be ironed out. I will say this. Dunn, at least, seems to be a guy who's going to put up a lot of assists. He's going to get steals. He's going to get a surprising amount of blocks. And he's also, on the flip side, he's going to get a lot of turnovers, not a lot of generated free throws, not a lot of threes. And then you have to decide, is that enough?
Yeah, I mean, he kind of falls into that, like, Dennis Schroeder for me. Like, he's fine for the time being. He's, like, a good stopgap point guard. But I don't think he's their point guard of the future necessarily, but... That said, he's better than anything else on their roster. No offense to Cameron Payne, point guard of the future before Chris Dunn. I wanted to acknowledge. I picked him up in my fantasy basketball league yesterday, and I felt dirty immediately. But yeah, he has been. He's been good with Chris Dunn. He's got like a turf toe or a sprained toe, right?
Yeah,
yeah. So he's been out for a couple games, and yeah, Payne has been playing. Like, they have some interesting young pieces. The Bulls, I mean, their management is going to F it up because that's what they do. But they have some interesting young guys. But let's go into. They have, I mean, they could have upwards of $40 million in cap space this summer. We don't know what they're going to do with LaVine. But remove LaVine from the equation. What else would you like to see them do? Do you want them to go after free agents?
If I'm the Bulls, I don't go after free agents at all.
Yeah. So what do you use that cap space to
absorb bad deals? Hey, Washington, with Jan Mahimi, what kind of assets can you give us if we take on Jan Mahimi? Like, how many future first rounders are you willing to let go of?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the right play. That's what rebuilding teams should do. Like, you're not going to compete. So what's the point of bringing in, like, you know, you're not going to get a LeBron or a Paul George or whatever, but, like, what's the point in signing a Kentavious Caldwell-Pope or something? Like, why? What does that accomplish? You win a couple more games, I guess, but, like, who gives a shit? Just, like, develop your young guys, and then, yeah, save. I mean, hell, even if you have, you know, even if you use, I mean, God, even if you re-sign LaVine to a max deal... You're still probably going to have at least like 15 million doing back of the napkin math.
Depending.
I mean, depending on what happens with the pick and whatnot.
But I can make this whole thing a lot easier on you. There are only two players on the roster right now for the Bulls that I would hang on to.
Okay.
Which is just undoubtedly Lauri Markkanen.
Yep.
And this name is going to surprise everyone. David Nwaba.
Oh, I knew you were going to say Nwaba.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because David Nwaba is fantastic. Bobby Portis might be the third name on that list if I should include a number three. He's been really good this year. But that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, Denzel Valentine can barely dunk the basketball. He's that unathletic. That's going to be a problem moving forward. Zach LaVine, we've already touched on. Robin Lopez does not deserve this mess. He deserves better.
Yeah.
Justin Holiday is in a similar vein as Robin Lopez. Like, there's just no point. Chris Dunn, we touched upon. Jerian Grant has just not been very good. Cameron Payne has been good, but, you know, what's his ceiling? Backup point guard anyway. Cristiano Felicio is overpaid and has been brutal. Paul Sipser is arguably one of the worst NBA players in the league. It's bad.
Yeah.
It's bad. And the Bulls are probably going to pick 8th or 9th because, yeah.
Is there anyone in that range who you really want them to go after?
If I'm the Bulls, I'm just looking for the most impactful young guy. But I know that they're not going to stick there. They want Marvin Bagley. This has been reported. They want Marvin Bagley. Let's ignore the fact that he plays the same position as Lauri Markkanen. And remember, when you trade up for a specific guy, then you take need into account.
Yep.
Because then you have to combine both the need and talent. But apparently they think of either Bagley or Markkanen as a center. I am going against the grain on that. Both of those names as a center, but so be it. So they're probably going to package their own pick, the Pelicans pick, and one of their youngsters. I wouldn't be surprised if it's Bobby Portis.
It's atrocious. That's so bad. That's so Bulls, but it's so bad.
But you could totally see that going down.
Oh, absolutely. Without a question.
If I floated that idea out on Twitter, every Bulls fan would go, no, that would be so stupid. But not one single Bulls fan would say, I find that unrealistic.
Yeah, right. It's a dumb move, but I could totally see them do it.
I mean, how many picks did they eventually overall give up for Doug McDermott? Yeah. I think 6.
Yeah. Ugh.
Welcome to Total Wine & More. It's much more than a wine store. It's the 8th wonder of the world.
When people talk about Total Wine & More, they get a little carried away. We're just a big, friendly place run by people with a passion for wine and beer. See, we travel the world to find the best wines from the best regions, and we sell them at the lowest prices anywhere.
And friendly, helpful experts at every turn.
You know what? Maybe we are the 8th wonder of the world.
Shop in-store or online at TotalWine.com.
Welcome to Total Wine & More. It's much more than a wine store. It's the 8th wonder of the world.
When people talk about Total Wine & More, they get a little carried away. We're just a big, friendly place run by people with a passion for wine and beer. See, we travel the world to find the best wines from the best regions, and we sell them at the lowest prices anywhere.
And friendly, helpful experts at every turn.
You know what? Maybe we are the 8th wonder of the world.
Shop in-store or online at TotalWine.com.
All right, let's move on to the Knicks, unless you have any parting thoughts for the Bulls. We have to start with Kristaps Porzingis, obviously, who is going to be, I mean, he tore his ACL. He is, they might have him back at the start of the year, but at the same time, he might not be ready to play until early 2019.
Dear Knicks, don't rush it.
Right. So like, I'm thinking they should approach the 2018-19 season as basically, I don't want to call it tanking because they just don't have their best player. It's like, that's what it is, but they shouldn't go into this summer thinking they're going to be competitive next year, right? Like they should, they should immediately just say,
well, it's the Knicks. So when do they ever go into a summer thinking they'll be competitive next year?
I think they always do. And I think that's the problem.
That's true. That's a fair point.
Yeah, like they're not
the results just that's true. The results just indicate otherwise.
Right.
No, you're right. You're right.
But yeah, I mean, like, you know, if they're thinking about like waiving or stretching Joakim Noah because they want to free up cap space, like, what's the point? Why? Mm. Why do it? Just wait. Because if next year is lost already, wait.
That's 1 year less.
Yeah, exactly. That's, or 2 years with the stretch. So like.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so it's less money on your cap for fewer years. Just like, it sucks. He's going to take $18.5 million to do nothing for you next year, most likely. But that's life.
Like, and who knows? By the way, look, if he gets a lot of minutes next year, Joakim, mm-hmm. and finds a little bit of his groove and plays well,
sure,
then Orlando will be knocking on that door immediately.
Yeah, that's true. But there's also the question, Mort, of Kristaps, who is eligible for extension as well. What do you do with him? Because I feel like before the injury, he was a no-brainer max guy, right?
Yep.
You still feel that way about him?
Nope.
Ooh, interesting.
He's 7'3". You just don't know the extent of what that ACL injury does to that entire frame.
Yeah.
I think here, because he's so abnormally tall, that is just a situation where you just go, I'm going to be very cautious.
Mm. Yeah.
So no, I'm going to gamble. I was ready to max him before. Mm-hmm. Then I'm going to be ready to max him again in restricted free agency if he comes back and delivers.
Right. I think the problem is, like, Phil Jackson is no longer in charge of the Knicks. But, you know, remember toward the end of last season, like, he skipped his exit meeting. His brother was, like, already kind of, you know, setting the stage for him to leave the Knicks. Like,
right.
Just floating ideas of, like, hey, Kristaps is not happy here. He wants out, basically. So, if you don't max him because of the injury, you're running the risk of him going and taking another offer sheet. Yeah, you can match whatever he signs, but he could sign a 3-year offer sheet with a 4th-year player option, and then you're costing yourself 2 years of Kristaps that you otherwise would have had if you just gave him a 5-year max.
Unless he just decided already, qualifying offer.
Yeah, I mean, look, coming off the ACL, probably, I'm guessing he's still going to want some sort of long-term.
I'm going to go back to this point again, and I know the people side at this, but he's European.
Yeah.
Look, we're different. The amount of, you know, we think differently.
Right.
It's really about fit and quality of life, because unlike living in America, we're not in a third world country right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, sorry.
Well said. That too. Well said.
Yeah. So the quality of life is very, very important to us in a sense of, you know, where you feel comfortable. It's not about necessarily the bottom line on your paycheck. And I wouldn't be surprised if his pride, which is very significant, especially in that country of Latvia, that I know, is actually a factor that no one should underestimate.
Mm.
I would not be surprised. I know a lot of people go, oh, you just max him, that's fine. No, stop treating him like he's American.
Mm-hmm.
He's not. And look, that area down there in Latvia, that it's very emotional. Everything is very emotional, and you go off how to make yourself happy in a different way. That does not mean financially happy.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see what happens. If he's set on, I want to leave,
yeah.
Even if he didn't hurt the ACL, he was going to take it anyway. We'll see what happens. I'm not saying, he's decided. Right. He's going to take the qualifying offer. But I'm saying that regardless of what happens, he could still end up doing it.
Yeah, I think the Knicks would have had to worry about that a lot more prior to the injury. But I think an ACL tear, I know it's not an Achilles tear. It's not nearly the career-threatening thing it was 10, 15, 20 years ago. But it's still a serious injury. Knocks you out for a year. I think at that point, you're probably going to want, again, maybe not a 5-year deal, but you'll want like some kind of, you know, you'll want the security of like $60 million just to be like, all right, cool. Like, God forbid anything else happens. Like, I have another setback from this injury. I'm going to lock something in that's longer than a year.
But you know, though, and he knows, it only takes one team. So if he comes back from the ACL, and he plays horribly, some team out there is going to give him $60 million anyway.
I guess.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, just because all the bad contracts.
Bismack Biyombo got 70.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of the bad contracts started coming off the books in 2019.
You know, but it takes one team. Oh, yeah. The 7-3 former All-Star. I'm going to pull the trigger.
Yeah.
You know it. Come on. I mean, let's not underestimate the impatience of NBA general managers.
That's true. Let's move to Frankie Smokes, and my question for him is, like, why do the Knicks hate him so much?
I don't know, Brian. I'm so frustrated about this.
What's going on? So they bring in, you know, they draft him with a top 10 pick, number 8 overall, one spot ahead of Dennis Smith Jr. Then they bring in Trey Burke. They trade for Emmanuel Boudier at the trade deadline. It seems like they envision him more as an off-ball guard than an on-ball guard. They
want to turn him into a two, yeah.
Yeah, so thoughts?
Well, I mean, theoretically it's possible. He's so young and he is so gifted skills-wise that I would actually not be surprised to see it sort of working out. I just want to reiterate something here. He's not going to turn 20 until late July. He is so young that you can still have a pretty important voice in how you shape him as a player. I will say this, though. Taking the ball out of his hands might be a mistake down the line.
Yeah,
I think he is a tremendous reader of a defense and how to sort of separate it. I think he is a thinker. Because he's not one of those guys who just comes in aimlessly and takes off-balance jump shots for the heck of it, like Zach LaVine. I think he's the type of guy who thinks the game up. And in that vein, you need to have the ball in your hands a certain amount of the time. Now, if they are intending to play him at the two, but as a part of a dual point guard backcourt, then that would be more intriguing.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's true. I just don't understand what they're doing, but I guess they're not really committed to Moutier or Burke long term. So you're right about Trae Young feeling like a Magic, like he's destined for the Magic. But if not the Magic, I feel like he's destined for the Knicks.
Oh yeah,
right. Like yeah, a Trae Young, Frankie Smokes backcourt. Because like to Frankie Smokes' credit, defensively he's great already. And I think
I would not hate that backcourt.
Yeah, it's intriguing. It's like
let me just look here for a second because Knicks right now
are slotted ninth. Yeah, so Trey
make Trey at that point.
I mean, he would have to slide based on projections as of late March.
I think he's gonna slide anywhere. Brian.
Yeah, right. I mean, a guy like Bamba might jump up above him and Carter just because
Carter's gonna jump when teams get a good look of Wendell Carter in private workouts. He's gonna jump,
and then my big boy Mikal Bridges is probably gonna jump, so yeah, it wouldn't totally shock me.
Yeah, you're not gonna get him, Brian.
I'm aware. Let's not rehash that.
I'm actually, that might sound like I'm teasing you.
Yeah,
I am legitimately disappointed because he would fit like a glove
in Philly. I'm aware. I am aware.
And his mom works for the Sixers.
I know. It would be so good. All right, last thing on the Knicks. Enes Kanter, free agent this summer. Been playing pretty well
for them. He has. Don't ask me about the salary. I don't know. I'm so conflicted about this.
Well, do you think they should re-sign him if it's not a max, but like, they should be after trying to re-sign him in general.
Dude, the guy's averaging 20 and 15 and a half boards per 36 minutes. He's an abysmal defender, yes, but that scoring / rebounding production is out of this world. I mean, look, you know what? I think we've done something wrong. We always talk about, the Greg Monroe, you know, the Greg Monroe comparison of having a big guy come off the bench and being this internal presence, or an Al Jefferson type. No, we should change that up to the Enes Kanter type of player.
Yeah.
Because
we included him before.
Yeah, he's great. I mean, he's just got some issues defensively, but yeah. look at the percentages. 60% from the field, 85% from the line. You know, he's averaging 14 points, 11 rebounds, and this is in 25 and a half minutes. You can't argue. His PER is 24.3. He's got a true shooting percentage of 63.4. Mm-hmm. He leads the league in offensive rebounding percentage. I mean, this is highly efficient basketball. He just gives up a lot on the other end. That right. is concerning, yeah, but you don't let this level of quality walk.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. I honestly don't know. I don't know what you offer. And I mean, he might not become a free agent. He has an $18.6 million player option for this coming season. So maybe he sees the market, sees it, you know, maybe he thinks he's not going to get more than that. He just opts in and says, I'll test my luck in 2019 when some of the bad 2016 contracts come off the books.
Here's the thing, though. He's going to be 26.
Yeah.
This year. Next, if he waited a year, he would be 27.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he and his agent would know there's a greater shot at him getting a better deal at the age of 26. Because yeah. if he's signed for 4 years, that's only going to take him to his age 30 season.
Mm-hmm.
Which, and you know, he's not reliant on athleticism. So right. I think, you know, a team would feel more comfortable in that age range. I know it's only 1 year, but I do feel that would play a factor.
Yeah. Yeah, that's totally possible. All right, Moit, do you want to wrap things up with our crush of the week?
I'm crushing hard on Carmelo Anthony right yeah. now. He brought 4,500 students from Baltimore to the march. What's the name of the march? I keep forgetting.
March for Our Lives.
March for Our Lives. Yes, yep. Thank you. So they could protest and do their thing. And so shout out to Melo for recognizing that America's youth right now is awesome.
Yep.
And are fighting against your third world country standards.
Yep. Yeah. Shout. I mean, shouts to him and to really to anyone who participated in one of the marches today. It's just overwhelming to see that type of turnout and response. And I hope they know that, you know, for anyone who wasn't able to attend, they have the support of a lot more people than the ones who just showed up today. So shout outs all around. And Mort, I'm going to stick with the shouting someone out for non-basketball reasons, but I got to give a nod to both Vivek Ranadive and DeMarcus Cousins. And the backstory there is that Stephen Clark is a 22-year-old black man from Sacramento who shot at 20 times by police in the backyard of his grandparents' home, I believe on Sunday night, because they thought he had pulled out a gun. It turned out to be a cell phone. Clark was accused of breaking into three cars and his neighbor's home. So on Thursday, people in Sacramento were protesting. The video came out of the police shooting on Wednesday. So on Thursday, people protested in Sacramento. The protest spread to outside of the Kings Arena, where they were playing the Hawks that night. Police they said they couldn't get people into the arena safely, so they basically shut out a huge majority of the people who held tickets for that game. So they moved everyone down to the lower bowl and gave them all, I think, free drinks and like free popcorn and stuff, which is great. But afterward, Vivek came onto the court and just gave, you know, an amazing speech just about, you know, he said he supports the right to protest. He thinks, like, absolutely, that's something that should be done in a situation like this. And he was talking about, like, how he and the team really want to be an agent for change in their community, because they know they have a big voice, and with that, you know, with that privilege comes responsibility. So I forget where, I think it was Sam Amick from USA Today who wrote a story about it afterward, and he said he like met with a lot of the veteran players, with Vince Carter Garrett Temple has been big in terms of the police relationship in Sacramento and has done a lot of work in that regard this year. So he spoke with him. I think he spoke with Zach Randolph too. And they all just kind of encouraged him to speak out like this and show his support for the protesters, which I think was really, I mean, truly great. You know, we make a lot of fun of the Kings because of some of the nonsense they do with their on-court decisions. But I think this was an incredible stance for him to take. So for the next month, I'm swearing off all Kings jokes. There was a moratorium because Vivek earned my respect there. And then DeMarcus Cousins, too. He reached out to the Stephen Clark family to pay for his funeral, according to Jason Jones of the Sacramento Bee. You know, obviously, Boogie had a long time there in Sacramento with the Kings, but the fact he's still being such an integral part of that community, I think, speaks volumes. You know, he gets the reputation of being a hothead because he gets so many technicals, but, like, that speaks more to his character than any technical foul he's ever gotten in the NBA. So
people calling Boogie a head case should look in the mirror and ask themselves, when is the last time they went out and did something of this caliber?
Right. Yeah.
Because that's so heartwarming.
Yeah, it really was. So, I mean, the contrast is easy to draw between the NBA and the NFL. Like, you know, Vivek is an NBA owner and he's supporting protests. Colin Kaepernick remains unsigned because he was protesting police brutality, which is what Vivek voiced his support for. He was supporting people protesting police brutality. So again, it just makes me grateful that the NBA is so progressive in this regard, and like they realize these are not Republican and Democrat issues. These are issues that affect all of us here. No one should be in support of police brutality. That's not like a red or a blue thing. Like, Democrats respect cops too. They just don't respect a black guy getting shot at 20 times because they thought he was holding a gun, which he wasn't. Like, an unarmed black man being shot at 20 times. It's unnecessary. So yeah, yes, shouts to the NBA community. And I'm sure, I'm sure in our next episode, we're going to have a very similar crush segment, because I'm sure they're going to ask coaches and players over the next couple days about this March to Our Lives. And I'm sure
Can we already pigeonhole Steve Kerr and Greg Popovich?
Right, yeah. Proactive shout-outs to both of them. And I'm sure Stan Van Gundy, too, is going to have some really great comments. LeBron, it's a terrible time for our country, but a great time for NBA players and coaches and
NBA fans
and owners. Honestly. Yeah, just everyone being aware of these, these everyone involved in the NBA community stepping up in a time like this is huge. So shouts to all of them.
Absolutely. Two years ago, maybe 18 months ago, something like that, I was on the Danish radio, and I was talking about the NBA, and I was talking about, how expanding it is all over the world, and the fact that they don't keep quiet about issues and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And the radio host more or less ended the interview by asking me, do you think that the NBA is going to overtake the NFL as the biggest sport in America? And I told him I would be downright surprised if that didn't happen within 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to repeat that, because at this point I believe it more now than I did then.
Yeah,
the NBA is in my opinion the world's leading sports league, honestly. Yeah. When it comes to social understanding, social issues, and also quality of the product on the floor as well. The entire combination is just, it's so great, and a great, what you have in the back, like a great commission, like a great structure. Sorry, I was just
good foundation.
Good foundation, a great structure. You have like a great commissioner. You have, great political influences as well in terms of how players are treated and handled. You have the players union run by Michelle Roberts. It's just done so wonderfully. Everything is just on the up and up, which it should be. And they're just doing such a magnificent job with the whole thing. It's Yeah. What a time to be an NBA fan. It's just so, I'm so, so thankful for that.
Agreed. That's a good place to wrap up, Mort. So thank you all for listening in. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We would love any feedback. And reminder, please, please, please subscribe to us with whichever RSS feed you use, whether it's iTunes. Mort mentioned a couple of the Android ones because we are leaving
Podcasts.
Yep.
And yeah, Podcast Addict.
Perfect. Yeah, we are leaving FanRag Sports at the end of the month. So if you are subscribed to our RSS feed, you will continue getting our stuff. But otherwise, follow us on Twitter, iTunes, however, whichever of your favorite podcast apps you use. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian.
Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy! They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine and More.
Welcome to Total Wine and More. It's much more than a wine store. It's the eighth wonder of the world.
When people talk about Total Wine and More, they get a little carried away. We're just a big friendly place run by people with a passion for wine and beer. See, we travel the world to find the best wines from the best regions, and we sell them at the lowest prices anywhere.
And friendly, helpful experts at every turn.
You know what? Maybe we are the eighth wonder of the world.
Shop in store or online at TotalWine.com.